Welcome to the Groups Matter podcast show. I am co-host Brian Daniel, and I am here, with, as always, with Rick Howerton.
Yeah,
Rick.
Thrilled to be here, man. Let's do it.
You know, I'm just going to say right off the bat, I am glad that spring is here. I don't know about you. I had a college professor tell me one time that I'm a prisoner of the seasons, and so April is as good a time as any, right, to kick this off.
Yeah, but you just love March Madness. That's the truth of it all.
Not so much this year. Being a Kentucky alum.
UK fan, I get it. Yep.
Well, I appreciate everybody being out there. This is episode one of the Groups Matter podcast show, and I want to talk just a little bit about who we are and what we're doing. First off, I would like to say that Rick and I are groupies doing a podcast on groups. So we are, just speaking for myself, for the last 15 or 20 years, I've been in groups ministry by trade and craft. I produce small group Bible studies, so I'm in that community. But Rick, on the other hand, is quite a bit different. He is on the other side of this equation. So, Rick, I mean, how many days of the year are you on the road?
I'm working with churches about 110 days a year, either speaking or training or being at some event on Lifeway's behalf, talking about group life and what it means to be doing biblically functioning groups.
For all the small group point people, for pastors, for leaders, and even group members, what our hope is that we will be able to bring you tips, content, and information. Rick will be, he's out there, and he is monitoring the current trends. I mean, minute to minute, really, when you say you're in and out of conversations and on platforms all the time.
Yeah, one of the great things about the role I have that here at Lifeway is that I get to be in various churches, multi-denominations, various people, people who are out there in the midst of it all, learning from them, seeing what they're doing, and being able to kind of track what massive numbers of churches are doing when it comes to group life.
And so in this episode one, what we've got in, we'll have some regular features. Today we're going to be interviewing Chris Surratt.
Yeah.
He has been with Cross Point here in Nashville for years. He was actually with Seacoast for a while.
That's right.
Charleston, South Carolina, one of my favorite cities.
Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit about Chris?
Yeah, Chris is amazing. Chris is one of those guys that when you meet him, you realize he's got a deep passion for community and transformation. His history, is as Brian mentioned, is pretty amazing.
Yep.
What's even more amazing is his passion to see people who are on the fringes of group life getting into group life. And so, Brian, that's what we're going to be talking about during his interview.
What are you most excited about with Chris?
I'm most excited because all of us want to see massive numbers of people being connected to a transformational group. And he's actually going to share with us kind of some, let me say this, and you'll hear this probably whenever he and I talk. He took a church from 40% of adult attendees in weekend worship to 90% of adult.
Right.
And man, that's huge. That's amazing. Did so in 3 years. He's going to be talking about how he did that.
Yeah. I tell you what I'm most excited about. Chris has a book coming out in September called Small Groups for the Rest of Us, How to Design Your Small Group System to Reach the Fringes. I think that's a great term, because what Chris is going to be talking about is we've got I think in Chris's own words, we've got 50% of any congregation, more or less, that understand groups ministry and its intention and want to be involved. But he identifies this other group as on the fringe that maybe don't understand that.
Yeah.
And he divides that fringe into three groups, and he's going to talk about how to reach those. And that book comes out in September. And so I think it's really cool to have him on the show kind of looking forward to the release of that book and giving a sneak preview.
Well, Brian, what's so exciting about this, almost any group's pastor can get the people who know about group life and want to be in group life into a group. We're all after the people on the fringes. If we can get them in group and see their lives transformed, it'll change their families, it'll be amazing what happens.
And so after Chris, or actually between now and Chris, in just a minute, we're going to get to the post of the week that we've identified, and then we'll get to Chris, and then we'll spend a few minutes just talking about that interview and what Chris had to say. And then we, as a regular feature, we'll bring out some tweets of the week and get some people involved. And then one of my favorite features of the show is going to be what we're calling Rick's List. What are you going to be? What's your list today?
My list this week is going to be about spiritual transformation. And in an individual life, when someone is becomes aware of a biblical expectation, the stages they go through until they finally embrace it and live it out.
Okay, so let's go ahead and let's move on. Chris will be here in just a minute. And just like, I don't know about you, I remember a few years ago we were watching Seinfeld reruns, right?
Yeah.
I know during the 90s, watched a lot of Seinfeld. And so it was coming on late, and my wife and I were like, hey, Seinfeld. Watched it for a little while, and it's like, wow, this is really bad. And it was like the early episodes. So we're in the early episodes of, like, Groups Matter, right?
That's right.
And so what we didn't know was that Chris was going to be live in the studio, so I'm going to be sitting that interview out, and so it'll just be the two of you guys, right?
I think that'll be fun. Yeah, Chris and I are friends. That'd be good.
Yeah. So, all right, so let's look at the post of the week. This week, this is from Mark Howe, and it's 5 signs that you have a bad disciple-making design. Rick, why'd you choose this?
Well, Mark Howe is one of my favorite bloggers. In fact, if you don't follow Mark, you want to. He gives you more practical information and more understanding about group life, in my opinion, than any small group pastor blogger out there. So that's one of the reasons. But also, this blog post is so important. Here's the deal. Unless we're willing to evaluate whether or not we have a disciple-making church and a disciple-making groups ministry, we're never going to be able to then fix what's broke. And so he giving us these 5 signs really will aid us in this. You want me to move forward with those, Brian? Yeah, he just gives 5 quick points in this particular blog post. Although it's kind of intriguing. He actually starts with a Winston Churchill quote, and that quote is, "However beautiful the strategy, you should occasionally look at the results." And I think that's very, very important. You need to be checking out what the outcomes are as you climb into a strategy.
But you understand why people don't do that, right? Yeah. I mean, in a world where we're moving at the speed of light constantly, I think sometimes we just forget these very basic principles. Of course you want to look at results, but sometimes we need to be reminded that there are results we need to look at to make sure it makes sense what we're doing.
Well, precisely, because if you have a vision in mind, and a vision is a mental image of the final outcome, you'll never get to that destination unless you're consistently and constantly evaluating and fixing what needs to be fixed. So these are the 5 things that he shares that you might need to know as you evaluate the 5 signs you might have a bad disciple-making design. The first is this: you don't have enough adults being discipled. In essence, you don't have momentum building so that people want to be discipled. This is a very important point. So often we believe we have a disciple-making church, but no one is really longing to be discipled. So that's a really good point that Mark makes. The second is this: you have plenty of adults being discipled, but you are rarely producing disciple makers.
This is one of your drums that you beat, isn't it?
This is a hot button for me. I happen to be sitting at a table with a leading discipleship guy that goes around to his conference everywhere, and I'll never forget him quoting, I believe it's 2 Timothy 2:2, which reminds us, Paul's talking to young Timothy, and he says, "What I have taught you, pass on to reliable men who will then teach others." That is, as you are a disciple, then be discipling someone else. And this fellow actually said, many of us think we're making disciples if we're discipling someone. He said his perception of what a biblical marker was based on that passage was, if you've not discipled someone who's then discipled someone who's then discipled someone, in essence, there's been 4 generations, you're not really a disciple maker. And I tend to lean that direction with him. I think this is vital. I think that's what Jesus intended. I think the world would be quite different if we had not just enlisted church members, but we'd made disciples of those people who are church members.
That's such a fine line between those two terms, but big difference.
Huge difference, for sure. His third point is this: you have plenty of adults who have been discipled, but you still never have enough people serving. I think the question becomes, are you truly a mature disciple unless you've then begun serving? Because disciples are servants, and we are all servants of Jesus Christ. Another great marker that he gives us. The fourth is this: you have plenty of adults who have been discipled, but you aren't developing a culture of generosity. Mm. Now, Brian, does that resonate with you? I know you go to a church that's all about generosity.
I tell you what sticks out there is the word culture. I think it's one of those things that we probably talk a lot about. I think Chris is going to talk about this idea of intentionality. You know, and that's something again that I think everyone is aware of, but putting that into practice, not the easiest thing. And so establishing a culture, it takes a ton of effort and time. And those two things together, really, it takes patience. And I don't know, a lot of times, you know, you talked about results and looking at the results and analyzing the results. Do you really take the time to be intentional about developing any given culture, much less one of generosity? So, yeah.
Well, I think not only the time, but the energy.
Yeah.
In order to change a culture, you have to take a community and change a community's paradigm, which is most often painful because people push back, and is most often tedious because of the pushback, and also because it just takes time. In creating a new culture, it demands the leader have a specific vision of what he or she wants to see become a reality, then be willing to go through the long process of changing that paradigm. So it's an essential principle.
Yeah, a friend of mine used to say, I guess he still does, you know you've changed culture when it becomes a joke at the water fountain.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
When it's so ingrained that it becomes to that level of vernacular, that's when you know you've changed culture.
I hope I remember that, Brian. That's good stuff. And then
well, we got it recorded.
Okay, well, cool. His point number five is this, the final one. You have plenty of adults who have been through your discipleship pathway, but what you're producing barely resembles Jesus. And that's huge, because if we're being discipled to maturity, really, the outcome is we look more and more like Jesus. I love what we've heard Eric Geiger say here multiple times, and that is the goal is basically, I won't say it as well as he does, but it's not to get people to do the right things, it's to become a new person, to see heart transformation, not just actions legalistic actions, living out legalistic actions.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question. In terms of Mark's post here and the five signs that you have a bad disciple making design, how does this play out in group life? It seems like discipleship has always been a part of group ministry, right? But it seems like more recently it's becoming more a part of that conversation. Is that true? Is that what you're picking up?
Oh, Brian, you're dead on.
Yeah.
Whereas we used to talk a lot about community, now we're talking a lot about discipleship.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, right?
So in my opinion, that's a very good thing.
So tell me how, just quickly, as you identified this post and as you've thought about it, how does this play out in group life?
Well, I want to come back to something you just mentioned. But first of all, let me just say so that I can – this will lead into the answer to that question. We were not called to make friends. We were called to make disciples. And so when you can start looking at it from that perspective, and then you look at this list that Mark has given the small group world, you realize that not just every group's pastor should be evaluating what's taking place, but every small group leader needs to be led to evaluate every group and every group member. Because you make disciples on an individual basis in community, you don't make a community of people disciples. It's important that you understand each person's life and where they are in stages of transformation.
Yeah, and it's one of those things probably both is true. I mean, the idea of being in a Christian community, you know, hopefully that is a redemptive one, is an objective and a worthwhile one, but not to the neglect of disciple making.
That's right. And I think the first step for a group's pastor is to simply be courageous enough to ask himself or herself this question. Am I making disciples or I'm just connecting people?
Mm-hmm.
You must connect people to make a disciple, and a disciple then naturally connects with people. But if the only focal point you have is to get more and more people in groups, and when they arrive there, they're just making friendships or they're just talking about their problems without growing in Christ through study of His Word and learning to live out the spiritual disciplines, then you're really not going to make a disciple.
Well, check out Mark's – this is Mark Howe we're talking about. This is I don't know if it's a recent post or not, but you need to check his blog out. I think it's Mark Howe Live.
That's right.
So you might wonder, if you're not following Mark already, that's something that I think Rick and I would both recommend. All right, ready to get Chris in here?
Let's move him in, man. Hey, Chris, man, I'm thrilled you're here. Wasn't a long trip, just a few blocks walk, I think, over from your house.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I just live right down the street, so thanks for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome, man. We're thrilled that you're here and really want to get into what's going on with your new book.
Yes.
Now, what's the title of your book?
Title is Small Groups for the Rest of Us, How to Build Your Small Group Systems to Reach the Fringes.
The fringes. How would you describe the fringes?
Well, I think that, you know, for the most part, with the small group system in the church world, we're pretty good at reaching those that will kind of raise their hand and say, you know, I want to be in a small group. I want to be in community. I want to join a group and go to some stranger's house and sit in a living room and, you know, kind of do that whole thing. And that's kind of what is easy to do. Those are the people that are easy to reach. And kind of what I look at in the book is, how do we reach beyond that? How do we reach those that wouldn't just automatically say, hey, put me into a group, let me be in community, but they need community? Because all of us need community, but not everyone is willing just to jump out and get into whatever our church is offering. And so that's kind of what the book is looking at, okay, how do we reach beyond that, you know, 50% people that will automatically join something when we ask them to join it, but we still want them to be a part of community.
Okay, like if I'm a small groups pastor and I'm listening to this conversation, I may be saying to myself, what would be some descriptors of those people? Would they be called introverts? Do you have kind of a, is there a mental list that you kind of keep?
Sure, yeah. I think there's some general overall categories of people. And again, this is a little bit of stereotyping, but in my book, I look at basically three categories of people that wouldn't automatically just jump into a group. First one, I think, is introverts. And this is a big one for me because I am an introvert, which is a little weird because I'm a pastor, you know, and you don't normally think that pastors are introverts because we have to be extroverted on Sunday. But honestly, I am. And so I kind of understand that category. And so I think that's a big one. And then another one I think for me is men. Again, I am a man, so I guess I understand it, and that's why it was easy to write about. But, you know, for the most part, men are not just ready to kind of join a group of other guys, you know, because we're a little worried about what is that going to be. You know, am I going to have to hold hands with another guy? Are we going to have to, like, hug and, you know, tell him my most deepest sin, you know, stuff like that. And so I think men, that's a tough one. And then the third category that I looked at was just outsiders, people that maybe not even – they don't even attend the church yet, or what we would label as, you know, sinners, or, you know, people that wouldn't normally just jump into a biblical group at a church. And so that's kind of the three big categories that I think that we're missing with most of our small group systems.
Well, that's great stuff. So my next question for you would be this. How do you find those people since they don't bring themselves forward in the church?
Good question. You know, I think that's where we need to get intentional. I think with a lot of the design of our small group systems, we look at, okay, how do we reach those that are already going to get reached? I mean, we have big kind of extroverted, centered, you know, connect events where we say, hey, show up and you're going to meet these strangers and you're going to automatically want to do community. And we're totally missing the introverts that would say, that would freak me out, you know? And so I think it's giving opportunities beyond just those events. You know, if you're going to reach introverts, it's giving them opportunities online. I think we're missing out a lot of times when we don't give options that are easy to look at, to think about when you're in at your home and you're online. And so you're putting group opportunities online or giving them a chance to just drop in a card on a Sunday morning and not necessarily have to go and meet somebody, but kind of take that first step that's not as dangerous, you know, dropping in a card. And I think, you know, for guys, it's about letting them be who they already are. You know, most guys already have a group of friends that they're doing guy stuff with, they're watching games with, or they're just hanging out, or they're going fishing, or whatever it is. And it's allowing them to do that, but inserting God into it. And so it's not trying to change them to fit into our mold of what we think a group should look like, but kind of reaching them where they are. And I think it's also giving people tools and permission to invite the people that are in their circles into their community.
Wow, man, that's excellent stuff. So let me take it to the real practical level. So you get them to believe in themselves enough to be in a group, or you get them at least understanding that being in a group is going to be important for them. Mm-hmm. It always comes down to this with the groups, Pastor. And by the way, the beautiful part of this conversation is I know you've done this because you took a church that had 40% of weekend worshipers mm-hmm. to having 90% of adult weekend worshipers in a group. So you're a winner on this one for sure, and I love that. How do you take them from knowing a group is important and to connecting to a group and actually getting them to register to be in one of your groups? Or do you even do that? Are you concerned about them being on the list per se.
That's a good point, because I think a lot of times we get so wrapped up in our numbers. You know, asking small group leaders to take attendance every single week, because we got to know who's in your group. And we get wrapped up in that. And I think we get lost in, this is really about community. And it's about inviting people that are in your circles into your community, and not necessarily caring, okay, do they add to our statistics? You know, and so a lot of what we did is encouraged our leaders and hosts to just invite the people that are around them into community. Don't worry about so much about, are they a member of the church or have they gone through our process? And that even goes for the hosts and the leaders. We didn't worry so much, have you gone through our Church 101, Church 201? It's just, hey, we'd love to resource you so you can use the relationships that you already have and bring them into biblical community.
Yeah, so Chris, in your setting then, you didn't start with the leader coming to you and saying, or you didn't start with recruiting leaders. It sounds like you started with a person determining they wanted to be leader and them coming to you. Is that correct?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we gave permission for anyone basically that had a group, you know, two or three friends. We gave them permission to be a host or a leader. And we said, hey, you know what? We'll give you all the resources. You know, we don't really care who you invite to your group. We're going to resource you and we're going to check in on you and we're going to do some soul care. But we want you to already have those relationships, and that's going to be your group. And so we didn't worry so much about all the training. You know, we started them on some basic training, but we didn't make them jump over hoops or through hoops. You know, we said just, hey, you've got a circle of relationships. Let's bring God into it and let's see what happens.
Okay, I know what the small group point people that are listening to this podcast are asking themselves. What kind of training did you give them, if any?
That's good. We, you know, it depended on the level. So basically the base level that we had was a host. And so we said, hey, if you've got two or three friends, we would love for you to do the next 6 weeks of community with them. And we're going to give you your curriculum. We're going to give you all of that. And a part of that, we also gave them a DVD, and it had six very short training sessions, you know, very basic, just 2 to 3 minutes of, okay, how do I invite people? Who should I look for to be in my group? How do I host a group? How do I facilitate a conversation? And we gave that to them. We said, here's your training. Here's your curriculum. You guys run with it. And so basically anyone could do that level of it. And then we had, you know, regular community group leaders that we had a little bit more training. But we said, hey, don't worry about doing all the training. Just get started on it. Because what we found is, you know, once they get into it, then they start having questions and then they start doing the training and they're like, oh, wait, they kind of answer that in the training instead of like, okay, you have to do all these 4 or 5 sessions before you can even have your first group. And so a new leader or a new host, we ask that they have a coach for at least the first semester. And then after that, we'll say, hey, do you still need a coach? If you do, that's great. We'll go with it. If not, that's cool.
That's exciting, because coaching always is a big question right now.
Yep.
Do I need coaches? If so, how often do they connect with people? What is their real role? Are they supposed to get with their group leaders once a month and have a prayer time?
Yep.
But you guys, your system was much more organic than that, wasn't it? And more personal than that.
Very organic, very personal. You know, we didn't have a set amount like, okay, you need to have 3 coffees with your leader this semester. You need to, you know, whatever. We just said, hey, check in with them at least once or twice, and it may lead to more, or it may just be that once or twice. We said just it's about soul care. That's all that coaching is about. And I think that's where we, you know, I talked to a lot of churches and they feel like their coaching is failing or it's failed and they've given up. And I think it's the expectations that you put on your coaching system and on your coaches. If you're putting a lot of expectations, it's probably going to fail unless you're paying them to do it. If you're saying, hey, you know what, it's just about relationships, it has more of a chance of succeeding.
Okay, we're about out of time, but I want to make sure I get a couple more questions from you, because I think these are important. If I were listening to this podcast and somebody said you went from 40% of weekend adult worship attenders to 90% in groups, mm-hmm. I'd be going, give me a quick summation. Are there 3 things that you did that I need to think about? Any specific things you'd take us down that pathway?
Sure. I think first, the one thing that you have to make sure if you're gonna be successful with getting a lot of people connected is the pastor has to be the champion of groups. The lead pastor has to be the one on the stage talking about his group, talking about the stories that are coming out of his group, and people have to see that and understand that he is completely bought in. If that's not the case, you can still have a pretty successful small group system, but you're probably never going to get to 90%. You're probably going to get 40, 50%. You're going to get those people that will do it no matter what. But the pastor really has to be bought in. And that's what we had at Crosspoint. Pete Wilson bleeds community. You know, every time he talks about his community. And so I think that's key number one. I think key number two is that you have to set achievable goals. I think if your church is at 30% and you're like, okay, at the end of this year, we're going to be at 90%. That's going to be tough to do. I think if you'll set a goal of, okay, let's do a campaign and we're going to get to 50%. You know, next year we're going to do another campaign. We're going to get to 60, 70%. It took us 3 years, honestly, Rick, to go from we were at 33% when I got there. It took us 3 years to get to 90%. And you have to be okay with that. Celebrate those milestones. And then I think the third key is just opening up, like I said earlier, to people who wouldn't normally lead or host a group and say, hey, what, we'll help you do that, and just letting them do it.
Fantastic. The other question I have for you is this. First of all, let me just say thank you to you for your friendship, but also for your knowledge and everything that you've done for the kingdom. I want the listener to know how you can continue to help them. So I'd like for you to give them a couple of things if you'd be willing to. That is your tweet address. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I want them to know about your blog, because you Absolutely. Do some fantastic and practical blog posts. And then finally, I think you're available for consulting.
Yes.
So you can help churches personally if they'd like a personal consultant to come in. So however you'd like to be able to communicate with them in that fashion.
Absolutely. I just recently stepped off of staff after 5.5 years. And the reason was to focus really on helping other churches, because that's my heart. And so I'd love to help you in any way you can. My Twitter is at Chris Surratt, S-U-R-R-A-T-T. So if you want to check that out, I'd love to follow you back on that. Or my blog is chrissurratt.com, and I put a lot of my just thoughts and ideas on there as well. And then, if you need somebody to come in and help coach or consult, I'd love to talk to you about that. My email is chrissurratt@gmail.com, and just shoot me an email and let's talk and let's see what can happen.
Well, folks, we're grateful that Chris has been here. I know you are too, because you've been given some really important information. Not only that, you now know how to contact him if you'd like to learn from him. Thanks a bunch, Chris.
Thank you.
Well, that was cool. What'd you think about that?
Pretty amazing, actually. I think the thing that captured me most, Brian, was the whole idea of letting people form their own groups. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of us find this responsibility as a groups pastor to sign up leaders that have been through some, that will go through some meaningful, substantial training, and then help them find the folks that are going to be in their groups. But man, that's not what they're doing, and they got 90% of their people in groups.
Yeah, something's working, isn't it?
Something's working.
I thought it was really cool what he said. Basically said letting groups be groups. Mm-hmm. Basically what he said was meeting people where they are is a term that we've heard for years. But how that translated was letting groups just be groups. And there was something very intentionally organic. A friend of ours used to call that, remember, intentional meandering? Remember that term?
Yes, sir, for sure. Great term.
A little buzzy there, but I thought Chris was, that was great. Hope to have him back.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's have him back.
And the idea of this fringe being divided into those three, I mean, that was really interesting to me, because that's what I was, that term applied to group life was something that I was not familiar with. And I think that's very helpful, too, to think in terms of the introvert, the outsiders, which I would have probably put those together, but those are two groups in Chris's ministry. Mm-hmm. And then men as a separate group that he goes ahead and he puts men in that fringe group, no matter, just as a category to treat all men as if they're fringe. That means that every man that walks through your door that you have a contact with, you have to be intentional with. You can't just say, roll the ball out like, say, John Calipari might do.
Well, and the amazing thing is that we didn't bring up in that conversation, but we know to be true, is if you reach the man in a home, and it's a man and wife and children, you're most apt to reach the entire family. On the other hand, if you simply reach the wife or the children, you're not going to have nearly as much success in reaching the entire family. So as we're thinking about group life, we need to be really straightforward in going after men.
So again, that's Chris Surratt, and I think you've got his Twitter handy. I think it's just at Chris Surratt.
That's right, at Chris Surratt.
And Surratt spelled S-U-R-R-A-T-T.
That's correct, yep.
And if you want to find his blog, we'll put that in the show notes for you.
There you go.
All right, we're going to move on to a regular feature here called Tweets of the Week, and this is where we're looking at some things that maybe have been posted in the last several days that were either insightful or interesting. And we would encourage everyone, you can follow Rick Howerton at Rick Howerton, RickHowerton. I am actually at BC Daniel, and we'll be looking at those followers to find these tweets of the week. Rick, what you got?
Well, I've got one that really intrigued me. It's a guy named John Wiley, and his address is actually at John Wiley. And it, just to quote him, "Not going to lie, the series finale of The Walking Dead is tempting me to skip on small group. The struggle is real!" Exclamation mark.
Oh, man, that's kind of hit me in a real place.
All of us can live there sometime.
Just at the end of March Madness, because we're meeting on Sunday nights, and it's like, oh, no. Kentucky's going to be playing on Sunday night. I just know it. I'm going to have to make that epic decision.
It's a big deal, man.
I think everybody wrestles with it. I've got one from Michaela Korn, it looks like. She is at MikalaCorin971. And Michaela says, "I love that I hang out with my small group and not a huge one filled with drama." That's not something you would run into on your travels, is it?
Oh, man, every group, if they're not careful, they have drama. Sometimes you got to differentiate between drama and honesty. But, yeah, that can get real tough. Now, I've got one that intrigues me. I don't know the person's real name. It just says blurry face and then an A and an F. But they're at RAEYAZGE, and I love this. Here's how it reads. It reads, "So blessed to have a small group that wanted to sponsor little Joshua out in Kenya. So excited to be part of this." Brian, do you think groups ought to think about this, do you think?
Yeah, and I've talked about this before, but if it's a challenge to mobilize your group in a missional sense, this is an outstanding way. So I'm glad you found that because, this is not time. It's not big dollars, but it's huge ministry. And it's also something you can do together. This is what I like about that. Maybe there's someone in the group that's on the verge of leadership. This is something that you can hand over to that person, to take ownership, collecting money, maybe reporting back, being in communication, those things. So this is a way that you could actually develop leaders in addition to being missional.
I never thought of that.
Twofer.
The other thing that's fantastic, anytime a group is on mission with a common project, no matter if it's just giving money or going to a soup kitchen and working or whatever, it builds community. And that's what you're longing to create.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for this installment of Tweets of the Week. So we want to move to Rick, Rick's list.
Yeah, well, just real quickly, want to give a quick list to.
Just by the way, I just want to say this is one of the things I'm most excited about. I love Rick's list.
You're very kind.
It was my idea, so appreciate you playing along.
Well, I hope there's something worthwhile here. I think that the list today might be intriguing for some people. I think we often talk about spiritual growth, and we were told if we're going to make disciples, to teach them to obey all I've commanded, is what Jesus said. And sometimes there's a little process to that, and I think there are seven phases I'll go through real quickly. First of all, a person realizes that there's a recognition of a biblical expectation. That's phase one. Phase two, then, there's discomfort. Discomfort is experienced by the individual who has become aware of a need for a changed belief or acting on a biblical obligation. I often say spiritual growth begins with discomfort. Mm. So that biblical expectation arises, then the discomfort is experienced. Then phase three is the small group leader wisely guides their group member toward action, because oftentimes in our discomfort, we need a little shove, something to move us forward.
All right, so tell me this, just stop you real quick. So how does this small group leader identify a group member that is ready for this step?
Well, sometimes it's not a question of being ready. It's helping them understand that there's going to be discomfort and to move into the discomfort rather than running away from the discomfort.
Okay.
So Jesus calls us to help the poor and the needy. And let's imagine that we're out on the street with our group and we realize there's a homeless guy there that's hungry. Somebody says, "Well, I would never reach out to him." What they're really saying and not understanding what they're saying is, "I would never grow in Christ because I will never choose discomfort." So guiding them into, rather than moving them away from, something that God has as an expectation is important.
And knowing your flock.
Precisely.
You need to know where people are in your group. And that just comes with you've got to pay attention.
That's right. But when a group leader decides, "I just want everybody to be comfortable," What they've just determined is, I don't want anybody to grow to full maturity.
Ah, that's a good word.
That's huge. Yep. Phase four is the small group member makes the decision to do what's right rather than choosing to do what's easy. Mm. Phase five, the small group member acts. So they move beyond their discomfort and they literally do what they're called to do. And then phase six, the small group leader and small group members celebrate with the individual that has courageously moved beyond their comfort zone. And Brian, this is huge. It's we all at heart are children. We're all children of God, if I can say it that way. And when we do something that is beyond us, the celebration of it instills in us that was a good thing to do. So that's just huge. And then finally, the phase seven is the individual experiences growth and is more easily motivated to take on the next act of obedience found in the Bible. So we start with Scripture, we end with Scripture. Expectation, celebration, next time it's easier.
One of the things when I was looking at this heading into the show here is the idea of checkups. Mm-hmm. I know one of the things that I've become, I would say, almost painfully aware of is the absolute enormity of prayer needs. That in any given conversation, instead of finding the way out of that conversation or thinking about what I'm going to say next or how I'm going to respond, if you just listen, if you just take all those words in. I've learned to let that inform. You know, I keep on my desk, I keep a post-it note with all the people on it that I'm praying for. And as I've done more of this and really listened to people, it's almost overwhelming. The only way you can manage with the Holy Spirit. But as a small group leader, if you're doing that, you're going to need to be checking up and really paying attention to everything that's going on in your group. I mean, that's to a large part, I mean, the pastor is the ultimate shepherd, but this is also your responsibility.
Well, Brian, you said something that's so important. That is to pray for group leaders. Jim Egli did a book a while back called Small Groups, Big Impact, and they did research and polled thousands of small group leaders in, I think, 300 churches in maybe 30 countries. And one of the most interesting things they found out was this. A small group leader can spend a lot of time preparing for the weekly meeting. They can do a lot of things outside the meeting time so that people are getting together. But the number one reason that people were growing and probably stepping into those dangerous places whenever the word led them to obey something that was uncomfortable was that the group leader was praying for them individually on a daily basis.
Well, spiritual growth begins with discomfort.
That's right.
You know, that's the, I guess that's the parting words there. That's the parting shot. Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode one of the Groups Matter podcast show. We'd like to thank Chris Surratt for being with us today. That was great. Hope to have Chris back. And we will see you next week. You can follow Rick on Twitter at Rick Howerton. And we look forward to being with you again for episode two. You guys have a good week.